Good afternoon. In this age of new technologies that are being used for instrumental collection of data and electronic data exchange, there's been a shift from the use of isolated laboratory processes to a more, a collaborative continuum, if you will, of client services that are dependent not only on good laboratory practices, but also on flexible IT service delivery. And as we look at these economically difficult times, many of the state, federal, and local agencies are looking at consolidated IT as a mechanism for delivering these IT services. So there's potential here for opportunity, and there's potential for, problems. And our goal here today is to talk about, in a positive sense, some of the things that laboratories can do to try to prevent harm in this new world. And as we know, there are many forms of public health laboratories. I can only say there are many forms of IT delivery. This presentation is going to certainly emphasize laboratories, but I think there's a great deal of similarity for public health agencies that are collecting data to have similar concerns as the laboratories, as consolidated IT really has no particular focus as it consolidates services. Today I'm really going to focus on three areas. One in the relevance of laboratory informatics, which I think will be a quick shot in this group, but it's important to understand how big it really is. I want to talk about IT service options, and particularly an APHL white paper that was put together by APHL's Informatics Committee, and I have copies here in the front of the room for people that would like one. And additionally, I'll say it's also available on APHL's website. So what is the relevance of informatics? And we're all buried with paper. And I think the important message that I'm hoping that people will see here is that informatics, the information of science, the science of information, rather, is far more than what people often think of as your LIMS or your LIS system. While we do collect a lot of data in our laboratory, to me personally, my goal would be to see a machine-to-machine capability in our LIMS, where we're literally collecting raw data and moving it through XML files to our data receivers, with less attention on the actual report and more attention on collecting this raw data. But as things go, we don't often have a choice. But we do have a lot of laboratory data that's being collected, and the sense is the more you collect, the more people will want. And as this laboratory data moves out into other fields, again, I just want to emphasize the fact here that users of data may suffer from the same concerns as consolidated IT affects laboratories. Perhaps the best example of the new frontier, if you will, in LIMS implementations is the Public Health Laboratory Interoperability Project, which perhaps many of you know as FLIP. And this was a rather unique opportunity to assure that laboratory data is collected electronically. Electronic test orders and reports are moved electronically, no paper, no fax machines, no telephones. And it really emphasizes the fact that maybe several years ago, maybe 5 years ago, the talk was all about LIMS. But now really the talk is about LIMS interoperability. And the power of our public health system is really not in individual labs so much as it is in our ability to network these labs and work as one. This is a very extremely powerful capability. CIOs, the chief information officers that look at laboratories, may not often see this public importance, of how we fit in to an infrastructure, particularly where they don't see, a lot of funding coming their way to often, contribute to supporting many of these, public health systems. So who controls all this data that laboratories develop? And I think this is really part of the point of this paper. Who controls this data is often your chief information officer or your IT specialist in your state. And often, these are supported through unfunded mandates. So what are some of the IT service options that exist? I'm going to refer quite often in this paper to the National Association of Chief Information Officers, or NASIO. Sort of NASIO is sort of like APHL is to public health labs. It's an organization that represents CIOs. It was 2 years ago that when asked what's the highest importance, that it was pretty much unanimous. It's our budgets. Well, no, that's not even a consideration. It's how do we consolidate? And even as recent as 5 years ago, majority of states were passing laws, regulations, or policies, I'm not sure which, to basically infer that consolidated IT was in the works. So, according to NASIO, consolidated or centralized IT focuses on how states organize the delivery of IT services by combining existing organizations and services of IT and all these applications into a single application. Typically, these are mandated by executive order. And as I try to show in this picture here, you've got a centralized system where basically all command, if you will, exists in a single hub, where in a decentralized, a lab may be its own node. And while we certainly have examples of decentralized systems, we typically have three variations. And classically, you'll have basically decentralized, and you'll have a centralized, and then something that's in the middle. And shared and centralized sometimes get a little confused as well. Sometimes you might look at shared as just the first step in consolidating. On the other hand, you might say that consolidation is just the extreme example of a shared set of services. I think the critical issue here when we're looking at shared is the concept is a culture of sharing, a culture of participatory governance. So we know that IT centralization can certainly increase efficiencies and reduce costs. I mean, there have been examples we're all aware of how email is best distributed centrally, or how you at a desktop computer crash and a new one can be brought in a very short amount of time, with the new operating system and totally installed. However, there are cautions, and I think that it's the cautionary concern that's really generated interest for this paper, and that with any system, poor implementation choices can cause disastrous effects. But I think in particular, there's been a lot of concerns from the laboratory community about what could happen if consolidated IT, didn't have, more input from laboratory management. Some of the things that we hear, and again, a lot of these are fears, but again, our goal is to address these and come up with positive solutions. But there's concerns of lengthy bureaucratic decision processes, or fear that IT specialists that had really no understanding of laboratories will develop laboratory systems, or that the cost of IT services will exceed your revenue, or even the cycle, the times that you have to pay do not match with your grants. We've actually seen state laboratories unable to provide grants because of the high cost of their IT. So that's really the reason for the white paper, which APHL has put together. How can we come up with some positive solutions here to eliminate these fears? So the publication, The Brave New World of Consolidated and Shared IT Services, I have several copies here, and there will also be some copies at the APHL booth that's down in the exhibit hall. And what this paper really does, it provides two basic products. One is communication guidance. Basically, how do you convey laboratory functions to the CIO in your state? And what are appropriate questions that you should be asking to promote your laboratory capabilities? And secondly, would be operational guidance. And I think here we're looking for what are some of the IT models, what are some of the terms that would be used, and also what sort of adjustments may be needed as different models and configurations take place in your state. So, understanding the full landscape of IT services. We all know that spending on IT equipment is very high. I mean, we find it's very hard actually to put an actual number on this because so many different models or modules can be utilized in a LIMS implementation. Does it include newborn screening? Does it include environmental testing, forensics? There's so many things. But we hardly hear very much discussion about the total cost that's behind a LIMS implementation and the support. And these are really the issues that we're trying to convey in this paper. Informaticians in our APHL group have looked at this in sort of an analogy of a three-legged stool. You know, one leg is the hardware, software, and support. Another leg would be, say, the infrastructure. And another would be the trained, competent personnel. And if you want to raise this stool, you've got to raise all three legs together or you're going to have an unbalanced system. CIOs look at this, you know, in a sort of similar way. They look at the technologies that they need to support, which is often the server, networking, hardware, automated security systems. But they also look at governance functions, which can be, you know, dealing with costs, can be dealing with cycles of staff and training, and technical support, again, like email support or 24/7 capability. So the totality of the IT infrastructure must be considered as you begin service negotiations. Now, I'm not going to go into great detail about what a LIMS is, and that certainly wouldn't be the point here, but we have provided in this paper what we think is a very succinct description of what a LIMS should be, with the idea that this is how we suggest it would be conveyed to a CIO, who probably has no idea what a LIMS is. I know one state actually calls it an instrument control host, their LIMS. You know, trying to be able to speak, you know, the CIO speak. But it is important for you as a lab director to look at it from the other side. Not only how do you describe what you do, but do you understand all these concepts that must be in place to support your LIMS? And I think this is the area that we have emphasized in this paper is, you know, what all these different options are and what how would you go about, you know, coming up with costs and resources to support these infrastructures. So negotiation options. And this is probably the big issue here. CEOs and lab directors speak different languages. And if we want to be effective in our negotiations, I really suggest that the laboratory director, you know, learns to speak CIO speak. And that's, you know, something that maybe be difficult for us because we don't speak CIO speak. But that is directly what needs to happen. Now, this seems pretty stiff, but it's often conventional. I don't really see your CIO walking into the lab with a big fat handshake. Probably this is more likely to be the scenario. And we're both coming at each other from really different perspectives. And we're trying to, you know, incorporate, you know, something that they've never really had much appreciation for. You know, with our own survival here in the laboratory community, we really need to have support of our, you know, CIOs in our states. So we have to get ready to negotiate. So what does that mean? So one thing is identify your IT leader and their priorities. Now, this may take a little bit of scrounging around to do. It's not always easy to actually identify the leader that, say, may be in your agency. But try to explain the work of the laboratory. And again, in simple terms, non-laboratory terms. Try to document the laboratory business case. Identify costs to the best you can. Obviously, if these are functions that you don't have control of, they may not very well be easy for you, but you can ask questions going, you know, to your CEO and say, well, I'd like to understand the total cost of my laboratory to our infrastructure. And think about some of the services that you're aware of, but really have no real sense, like how much does it cost to support email, or how much does it cost to support an active directory that may be utilized on your network. And risks, I mean, these are, you know, really clearly important. If you're in newborn screening, Yeah, I think Willie Andrews is in the back here, and identify, well, what's it going to be to your state as a liability if you don't get a result out on a newborn screening in a reasonable amount of time? Or how about 24/7 during an emergency, as public health laboratories are often first responders in instances of national emergency? And of course, there's HIPAA issues, security issues, your ability to protect the data and archive data. And handoffs, you know, often refer to what happens during transitions. You know, a system goes down, or you're bringing up a new system. How's that going to be managed? And of course, participating in IT governance is important. They may not be calling you to a meeting. Sometimes you have to take the initiative. So we offer really two negotiation tools. Again, being on the positive side here, we're suggesting the Memorandum of Understanding, which to many people say, well, that's a common thing. We have Memorandums of Understanding for just about everything, don't we? But in this case, we're trying to generate, and our paper gives examples and a template, but on a more general basis to describe all the business cases that you can think of for a laboratory's existence. You know, talking about a vision, talking about parties that would work together, and getting it signed by all the different groups that may actually rely on your laboratory. That signature page is very important. Now, you can go further with what's called a service level agreement, and most CIOs would prefer this. This is very granular. It talks about funding models. It talks about penalties if people don't say what they're going to do, and in a particular, it talks about time frames. It talks about who does what and when and where. It's all the specifics. These tend to be extremely complicated and often require project managers to participate in the process. But the very fact that you're going, you know, to your CIO and saying you'd like to develop one, how do I do this? It's a very important first step. So what are some of the negotiation considerations? And there are many, but I'm going to list a few here. Again, I mentioned, you know, one state calling it an instrument control host. But obviously there's a fear here that the limbs would be taken out of the laboratory. You know, I can tell you one state that's here in this room that can't print a report without having to go through another server. And if that printer is down, he has to put in a ticket to have that printer fixed. So if they can do that, you know, what else can they do? There's a need for dedicated limb support. And that's really something that a generic programmer is not going to be there to help you. Even if you have a vendor, in the case of 24/7, who's going to be there in the middle of the night that's going to deal with a crashed interface between an instrument and your output? Managing your vendors, is that going to be something that the laboratory can have direct control of? This needs to be defined. Security issues. When you've got generic programmers that have access to your system, do they have access to your confidential data? Most of us in public health now have to have security clearances just to be within the laboratory itself. Of course, partnerships with high visibility agencies, that's something where you have to pat yourself on the back occasionally and try to bring in to the same meetings how other agencies depend on you. And of course, emergency response activities. And project management, I won't go into great deal on, but I know several state lab directors have actually taken a course on project management to gain a finer appreciation of what that's all about. It's clearly a part of informatics. It would be part of the science, but I really recommend Googling project management to get a fuller sense of how complicated that can be. So, and I know this probably sounds patronizing because I mean everybody says this. It seems, you know, that people don't like change. And I'm sure that CIOs hear this from all the agencies. And certainly I think our recommendation is to not be resistant to change here, but to look at this as an opportunity, basically to take the first step in trying to negotiate for what would be something that you would think reasonable and objective. and not fall into that category of becoming a whiner, which doesn't really work, does it? We all know that. So in summary, the negotiation process is outlined in this paper, and I'll just read these because I think this is something that was crafted, so I won't mess it up. But working with internal IT leaders to lay out the laboratory business case, and within that business case, necessary IT services. Look for the full 9 yards on this. Going into negotiations with state IT leaders, knowing their IT services, including those that are best managed in-house, thinking about the costs, risks, and performance metrics. And lastly, documenting IT service agreements in a formal MOU or an SLA with appropriate laboratory signatures. And that really concludes the formal presentation, and I'd be open for questions.